Welcome to KUOW's Speakers Forum. I'm your host, John O'Brien. In this podcast episode, on August 9th, 2014, in Ferguson, Missouri, 18-year-old Michael Brown was shot to death. Brown's death set off a series of protests and a national discussion that continues today. Reverend Starsky Wilson was asked to be a co-chair of a commission created by the governor of Missouri to study the aftermath of the events in Ferguson. Its charge was, quote, to address the underlying root causes that led to the unrest in the wake of Michael Brown's death and to publish an unflinching report with transformative policy recommendations for making the region stronger and a better place for everyone to live, unquote. Reverend Starsky Wilson is the pastor of St. John's Church in St. Louis, Missouri, and the president and CEO of the Deaconess Foundation. He spoke with Karen Turing of Social Justice Fund Northwest. We're presenting a portion of their discussion at Seattle Public Library's Central Library on June 7th here. You can hear the full program, including questions and answers, on our website, kuow.org/speakersforum. Thank you to Jenny Cecil Moore for our recording.
So those are some pretty powerful images. And I think a good place for us to start is with our history, because that is how we pattern ourselves for the future. So why don't you bring us to this moment?
Thank you, and thank you for the opportunity to share. Again, my appreciation to the Collective Impact Forum, to the Seattle Public Library, and to each and every one of you for being here. I got to thank Karen, because y'all don't know me, so you got to be here because of her. So thank you very much. We come to this moment and into this conversation from St. Louis. And as we said, history, I didn't know I would go all the way here, but I'll go all the way here. 1917, East St. Louis race riots. One of the largest
1917.
All right, here we go. East St. Louis race riots lead to a mass exodus of African Americans from East St. Louis, Illinois, into St. Louis. That also begins the trend that we see generation after generation of white flight from the city of St. Louis into areas that are north and ultimately west of St. Louis City. That kind of action, if you will, from the mass responses to African Americans in East St. Louis led also to massacres of many African Americans and their flight into St. Louis. I say this because around the same time, those folks who are coming into St. Louis and those who need to find themselves, need to find a space and place that leads to the establishment of the Urban League of Metropolitan St. Louis to help them to adjust to the community, but it also leads to a unique policy happening. We begin to have restrictive covenants made in neighborhoods by people who decide, I will not damage this neighborhood by selling my house to one of those African Americans. So I will enter into relationship with my neighbors and say, we will venture to embed within our deeds that these homes cannot be sold to those folks.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah.
We know about restrictive covenants.
Yeah, that's critically important. Because once we get to Ferguson and begin to talk about the issues that we see in this small hamlet of 21,000 people within a metropolitan area of 2.8 million people, those same covenants were used to set up neighborhoods outside of the city of St. Louis, but the boundaries began to be used to establish municipalities, chartered communities that could then also restrict people from being in these places. The St. Louis metropolitan area has 91 municipalities and 2.8 million people. In those 91 municipalities, there are 80 municipal courts. There are 57 police departments and 43 different fire districts or fire departments. That is what Professor Terry Jones called fragmentation by design. And that fragmentation causes for us, quite frankly, a culture of divisions and racialized segregation as well. So part of see in the St. Louis metropolitan community is one, the only community that leads the nation in two unique categories that are indicators for racial segregation. the number of municipalities per 100,000 people and the number of school districts per 100,000 people. And the St. Louis metro area is number 3 in both categories, thus one of the most hyper-segregated places in the nation. And so we come up to August 9th, 2014, and we find an incident between a young African-American and a police officer that falls in a line of American history. While we know, I know we won't talk about the event and the particulars thereof, it is helpful for us to recall that for the last 100 years of American history, every 9 to 10 years, there has been an incident where an African American has been shot by police, and it leads to a community uprising. Lindsay Lupo, in a book that I went to I'm a kind of a political science nerd, this is a political science thing, and I found myself in it, and I needed to ground myself and get some context for what the governor was asking me to do.
Ms. Lupo studies movements.
Studies, right? Movements, but also very specifically studies riot commissions. So her book, which is the most recent, more definitive work on riot commissions in America, is entitled Flak Catchers. So when I saw that title, I felt highly comforted, right? And what she notes is that these commissions, which come after these kinds of conflagrations, are used in unique but very consistent ways. And so part of what you see in these images is our attempt to trouble and to create tension with what we learned about riot commissions. Number one, they're used to make it look like executives are doing something when they're not. Number two, they have a tendency to focus on economic and community development and forget about the responses to the actual people and their issues. Number three, they're used to process people's emotions and to help them to have a place to talk about, to vent things over a certain period of time until it goes away, to run out the clock and give people a place to talk about their emotions without real impact and change. And finally, they're historically underfunded so that they don't have enough time or money to get the work done that they're actually asked to do. And so one of the things that we had to do was to be thoughtful about that and maybe even take some blows for what kind of funding was required to put into this work. So what you see on the screen is a collection of images from the course and time immediately following the shooting of Michael Brown, early images from the uprising, which began on August 10th, 2014, and then a movement all the way through to the day of the announcement of the No True Bill and the Darren Wilson case. So the images that you see with flames or burnt out areas are things that happened on the day of the announcement of the No True Bill. You see images from our commission meetings that I hope illustrate both the diversity of the meetings, but also the challenges that came up in those sessions. And you see the work we needed to do and had to do outside of the meetings to be consistent with our own sense of call and vocation, that this is our work, that the commission should be an organizing tool, and that we had to be wholly accountable to people on the ground. The one thing, last thing I'll say, and I think I can say this with confidence, I forget all, but anything that's in the dark or at night, like this image right here, was taken on my cell phone. And I say that because the nighttime images are the action images, the nighttime images are the agitation images, and you just need to know that, like, there wasn't a reporter somewhere. Some of us were actually there. And so there's a requirement of proximity to engage this work with authenticity. And so I'm just very clear to say that because it's easy from the outside to suggest that this is a nice, clean way to do this work on the side of the governor. And I'll get into that later, but I think that's the history, that's how we come to this moment. And ultimately, it seems to me, I'm glad that the Collective Impact Forum is creating space for this conversation, because what I believe it has led to, and part of the work, I said this earlier today, that we owe to young people like Brittany Farrell and Tara Thompson and Tori Russell and Tef Poe and battle rappers like T-Dub O, who are doing organizing in our neighborhoods today and doing books and organizing book and breakfast programs with people across the country, is that they kept our community in enough tension that everybody realized they had to respond. And so we're having a conversation in Seattle today about a commission that wouldn't have happened if they wouldn't have put their bodies on the line. And so I owe them that thanks and I owe them that love.
Yeah. So tonight what we want to do is basically talk about the commission, its work, and how you came to a collective resolution to do the work and recommendations. That's what we're hoping to actually take a look at and study, is the work of the commission. How do we come to a point where we recognize, and the report says that this term a lot, in an unflinching way, the root causes of why this happened, and we put together not only just recommendations, but a path forward to the better world that we all want to have. So that's the subject and substance of the conversation that we hope to have today. And earlier, you mentioned young people. You know, the youth are really the truth, aren't they?
Yes.
They will just make
yes.
you do things
yes.
that you may or may not necessarily be prepared to do. And I want you to speak to how, you know, the different ways that young people actually held this tension, as you said earlier, and literally made not only, you know, the greater metropolitan St. Louis take notice, but the whole world took notice. And that was the work of young people,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely. It was absolutely their work. And we also remember this is the work of ordinary folk in a neighborhood in Ferguson and Canfield Green in the North Winds Apartments, whose lives were disrupted here. But one of the things I say about this narrative that what happened on August 10th ultimately was a reaction to, I think, a visceral reality that people experienced on August 9th, which I talk about three groups of young people. We had had sustained advocacy and organizing for the last couple of years around the Fight for 15 with the Show Me 15 campaign, fast food workers mm-hmm. Who are working for a higher wage in not only the St. Louis metropolitan area, but throughout the state of Missouri. And some of those folks, like Rasheen Aldridge, were some of the first people there to see Mike on the ground. Mm-hmm. I said they look up and they look across and they see people like Tori Russell. Tori Russell had started school away. He grew up in Ferguson, started school away, came back. Was doing coaching little kids in the neighborhood. And Tori was one who knew the realities of the neighborhood and knew certain police officers in those apartment complexes you really didn't want to see coming, right? So they were just the cats from the neighborhood. There were the organizers from the Fast Food Workers Campaign. And then there were people like Brittany Farrell and Alexis Templeton. Brittany Farrell just graduated with her RN, just got board certified. She's one of the folks, little one with a megaphone in her hand, who's agitating and leading in chants in a lot of these images. Brittany was a fourth-year student at the University of Missouri, St. Louis, which is just not very far from Ferguson. What happened, I see her as one of those who's done all the stuff we told them to do. Went to school, got an education, was a single mom taking care of her baby, Mackenzie. But what happened around Mike's body was that the cats from the neighborhood and the folks organizing for a higher wage and the kids who were in school all looked up at each other and said, it really doesn't matter. This could be any of us, even all of us who checked all the boxes. And they recognized that they're the first generation of Americans who won't do as well as their parents, even the ones who checked all the boxes. This ain't gonna work for us. And so what they did was they decided at the call of Tori Russell. So Tori is one of the founders of Hands Up United. Tori told people that day, meet me tonight at the Ferguson Police Department. Wear all black at 8:00. We're gonna get some answers. All right. Tori makes the call. And they go there and he goes into the police department. He's trying to talk to people. People are gathering out there. Some clergy end up coming. You know how good, respectable clergy do. People trying to get people to sign petitions and stuff, right? He's just there for some answers. He goes in and spends some time in there. He comes back out disappointed and dejected. And he says to people, come back tomorrow. And people are upset and they're disappointed. He said, look, we've been dealing with this for 400 years. I can't get all the answers in 2 hours. And so it was that kind of commitment and energy that sustained them, and creativity, quite frankly. They created, the appropriate, sophisticated term is indigenously led activist groups. They were really just protest cliques. And they operated like cliques, you know? So after, there was 10 of them one day, then there was three groups of three. And they had this name, and then they had another hashtag, because they were dealing with the reality of trauma, because people were there out all night. And some of them were out all night because they didn't have no other place to be. At one point, we ran into a group. There were 11 of them living in a one-bedroom apartment. But they found each other in the movement. Alexis and Brittany found each other behind tear gas. And now they're married, revolutionary love popping up. And so, I mean, this reality where they created bonds with one another, wrestled in tension with one another, and did all of this behind enemy lines, pouring Maalox in one another's eyes. And the whole time, while they're doing this, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch is calling on the president to start a commission around Ferguson with no reply, and then calling on the governor to start a commission around Ferguson with no reply, and then calling on the mayor and the county executive to start a commission to study these issues with no reply. So for 90 days with no governmentally appropriate response, they're holding the line, they're going to jail, they're taking rubber and wooden bullets, they're taking tear gas, they're pouring Maalox in each other's eyes and milk, and trying to figure out how they're gonna live and love each other until somebody
and be accountable to each other, because nobody's being, obviously, nobody is being accountable to them.
Yeah, and it's important to say that some of these folks showed up in the commission work as well. So let's not discount them as protesters alone.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of these same activists turned organizers over time,
mm-hmm.
became people who facilitated sessions in the Ferguson Commission public meetings. They became folks who organized and turned out young people to inform the process.
Mm-hmm.
They were reporting in this state bureaucratic entity to the public on things that young people were saying. So we need not discount them as one category or the other, or see them as people who are just yelling and not contributing to creative conversation. So they played all of these roles. They've sat and informed national funders about the work that they're doing and the work that they needed to support. They've said no to funding because they didn't trust it, or said no because somebody else was better positioned to take it, and sought to orient this work with a great deal of integrity. So they led when no one was leading. Mm-hmm. And some of us who were smart decided to follow.
Right, right. And so the other thing that I didn't mention is that this is not just a conversation between myself and Reverend Wilson. This is a conversation in this room, which is why that microphone is over there. So as folks have questions, I do want you to, you know, just come up and queue up to the microphone. It's easy to do. And there's no shame in asking questions. There's no such thing as a stupid question. And we also know that Seattle, with the Q&A, there's a lot of A and very little Q. We are prepared for that, but we really do want it to be a community conversation. I am just here to kick off this conversation, but I truly invite each and every one of you, if you have a question, come on up here and let's get this conversation started. So I wanna spend a minute actually, and I have the Ferguson Commission report, Forward Through Ferguson. It's about 196
pages.
196
pages, 189 policy calls to action,
right.
Organized into four different categories: racial equity, justice for all, youth at the center, and opportunities to thrive,
mm-hmm.
With racial equity as the overriding framework.
So let's talk about who finally made it to the table. Now, here we have a history of commissions that were designed to do what? Run out the clock. I do believe, and I have read these 197 pages, that this is, we are looking at something different. We are really looking at a model that could work. And I got my fingers crossed. I'm going to ask you at the end of the conversation how it's working. But talk to me about who was at the table, why they were at the table, and how they got to the table. Because you know the, you know what the saying is, right? If you're not at the table, you're what?
On the menu.
You on the menu.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's really important to talk about who's at the table. So first, I almost didn't make it to the table. I don't know who put my name in. But we should, I'll give a little bit of credit. So the governor opened up. He announced in October that he would call this commission. He opened it to the community to apply to be a part of the commission. And there were applications from all over the country. And there were somewhere about 350 applications, online process, people could apply. And then some folks got called in too. You know how that goes, right? And so myself and my co-chair, Rich McClure, were asked to co-chair this work. Rich is a businessman. He at the time was the president and CEO of Unigroup, United Van Lines, and he had been the president of the local chamber, or the chair of the board of the local chamber, the chair of a group called Civic Progress, which is a collective of our 33 largest employers in the St. Louis metropolitan region. So highly esteemed businessman, driven by his faith, evangelical Presbyterian, driven highly by his faith and very conserving Christian culture, to this work to help people. And then there was me. I knew Rich because we worked together around some educational equity issues in collaboratives. So we weren't new to one another. And I think that was a key to the work. Ultimately, on the commission, there were 16 people chosen, including us. So the two of us plus 14, who were from throughout the community. So people like Rasheen Aldrich, who was one of the young organizers and activists who was there, Show Me 15 campaign, who showed up at the official commissioning in a Demilitarize the Police t-shirt. That made the governor very comfortable. You had me and Rich, you had my friend Tracy Blackman, another pastor within the United Church of Christ tradition, the leader of Big Brothers Big Sisters, our local Big Brothers Big Sisters affiliate, a school superintendent, two police officers actually, on the commission, and a former police chief who was serving as the head of the Department of Public Safety for the state. So a very diverse group of folks who were chosen, some residents of Ferguson, some not, most of us not, because we took a regional approach. We knew that we were not convening to resolve issues for 21,000 people in a municipality.
Right.
We were really convening to address issues that were pervasive in this metropolitan area of 2.8 million people, and that this work had to be regionally, it had to have regional impact before it could have national implications, right? But we also knew we had to set the table in a certain way. And so I tell people, who else was at the table? I got in trouble for this, so I'm just coming clean. Because we're a state agency, we had all of the things that state agencies have to have. So we had the bid stuff, and we had to have, and that wasn't gonna work. Certain stuff just wasn't gonna work. It militated against the process of actually doing work that could be trusted and work that could get done well. So I tell people all the time, I'm full-throated about this. There's nothing significant I've ever done in my life without black women. Ever. Ever. And so there's a firm called Vector Communications that's led by a group of sisters who do community engagement, strategic planning. And the first thing I did was call Vector. I was like, I like you, Rich, but I ain't doing this without Vector. And so they helped us to set up the community planning process. So our meetings were always organizing meetings. They were always to get community engagement and input. And ultimately, that process that they helped to set in place for us led to 3,000 people engaging in over 70 public meetings and providing more than 30,000 volunteer hours to produce this document, sharing their own testimony. So every meeting, after the first meeting. The first meeting, we tried to be all official and stuff. You know, we had one of those tables that were all the black skirts and then the pop-up mics and... And then we began with a briefing from the Attorney General's office about sunshine law. And we thought we should introduce ourselves to people, tell them our credentials because they needed to get to know us and all of this. About 2.5 hours into that meeting, oh, it went down. Sister came up to the mic, just started, no, we done with y'all. Yeah, enough of y'all talking. It's time for us to talk. And she was right.
She was absolutely right.
And it went down. And so we changed everything from that moment. And so no more table. The tables were around, but our chairs came out in front of the tables. We began to sit with the community, particularly when there were presentations, so that we were getting a pulse of what was going on. There was a lot of kneeling and negotiating. It's not in this deck, but there are pictures in the paper of me, like I'm pleading with people. And I'm just talking to that dude. But that kind of direct engagement became our posture, and we reordered our meetings. They always started with public comment, real public comment that we actually responded to, not like when you go to, you know, school board meeting and, you know, you come up to the line, they tell you, all they say is time, then you move on. So I know there are organizers in the room, y'all know this, right? So we actually began to engage people and we hear people's stories, and that began to transform how we began to do the work. So we heard people's stories, we heard from experts. There are folks who had lots of knowledge in this area. We gave that, but we're very intentional to center the stories of people who are directly impacted, to place that first in the work and to move from there. And so there was great diversity. The other thing we had to do was we had to move our meetings around. And so of all of our public meetings, and of those 70, there were 21 that were full commission meetings. So there were also work group meetings. We made sure that they went from St. Louis City to St. Charles, from North St. Louis to South St. Louis to West St. Louis, to all over the region, to make sure we were getting perspective. And in some cases, we were agitating people in different areas. So in the community in St. Charles, where they thought they didn't have any problems, we made sure to take a meeting there. And they came out and they showed all their wares and talked about how well they were doing. And the county executive was happy to say that if St. Louis County just did stuff like we do it in St. Charles, then everything would be okay. And I was very pleased to say, except for the fact that y'all have three police chiefs and none of them are here. So you were glad to roll out the Boys and Girls Club. Where's your police chief? Because you all have some of these same challenges and issues. You just haven't been under a DOJ investigation yet. And quite frankly, I think you all found out here, and we found out in other communities across the country, all it takes is a reason for the investigation, and we can find some of these same issues in any community. It was Tori who I first heard use the words, Ferguson is everywhere.
It is.
And so these same issues we find in other places.
That's it for this podcast of Speakers Forum. You can hear the full version on our website, kuow.org/speakersforum. Thank you again to Jenny Cecil Moore for our recording. Tune in again soon for more from Speakers Forum.